Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado. No wonder Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Coming up later in the program, Labor Secretary Tom Perez will be here. Secretary Perez is in Chicago today to talk about a growing program, a trend of programs, I guess I should say, around the country where states are setting up retirement plans for small business workers in places where they don't have a 401k. States are sort of forming their own laws where workers can contribute a little bit. Employers can take some money out of their checks, and then that way they will be a little bit more prepared for retirement down the road. So we'll talk to the secretary about that. Then we'll go to Lakeview and a cafe there where they are unplugging their Wi-Fi. Why? We'll kick that around. But first, Frank Sennett is here from Crane Chicago Business. Crane, welcome back to the Crane. Frank, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Steve.
So, you know, there was supposed to be this big meeting in Springfield this week. I think it was going to be Wednesday, where Governor Rauner and the four legislative leaders were going to be getting together for the first time, I think, in months. And then late last week, Speaker Madigan announced that he had a funeral out of state, so he wouldn't be there. And then the governor, I think maybe it was yesterday, said, okay, well, let's do it again sometime in December. So they put the meeting off. But Greg Hines, a great political reporter for Cranes, is reporting that there might be some movement going on.
Yeah, so there's an outside party who is floating a grand deal to break the budget deadlock in Springfield. And yeah, you go to chicagobusiness.com, you can see Greg's story. It's a plan hatched by Greg Goldner, who is a former campaign manager for ex-Mayor Richard M. Daley.
So there are a lot of questions about this guy, right? About whose side he's on.
And well, he was the campaign manager for Daley and then Congressman Rahm Emanuel. But there are, you know, some folks in Springfield who consider that he may be out front for Governor Rauner on this. So he runs a well-funded Democratic group, Illinoisians for Growth and Opportunity. So, you know, maybe he's bipartisan in his thinking on this.
So is it possible that he's operating on, I guess we just sort of touched on that. But, I mean, is he sort of floating something that's got the support already of someone, or is he just coming upon this all on his own?
Well, it's unclear. I mean, that's, you know, being discussed in the quiet corners in Springfield right now. It'll be more apparent as the days go by if this actually has some legs to it. But basically, it is the grand bargain potentially that, you know, people have been expecting, you know, some kind of big logjam break. So could this be the one? I don't know.
I like that he says it's met with anything from significant interest to suspicion in Springfield.
Exactly. So it would have an increase in the state income tax. It would extend the sales tax to cover more services. It would have a tax on some form of retirement income. It also would include a higher minimum wage, a big school funding boost, including $200 million a year extra for Chicago public schools that Mayor Emanuel wanted. There would also, for you know, more conservative lawmakers and budget hawks, there would be a 2% cap on annual growth and discretionary spending. They would throw Rauner a bone on one of his structural reforms that he keeps calling for. It would give local governments power to limit collective bargaining on health benefits and work rules. And then it would also take another crack at trying to figure out the pension mess. So there's a lot going on with this proposal.
And so the idea is give a little bit to everyone and take a little bit from everyone and maybe get them to agree. But from what it looks like, it might be Madigan who could hold it up again.
Yeah, I mean, it remains to be seen whether he would support that. They're talking about the pension reform being along the lines of what Senate President John Cullerton was proposing earlier. You know, in terms of new revenue, it's $9 billion all in with this package. So that's a lot of new and increased taxes. You know, so maybe this does skew towards something you'd think maybe the Democrats would be more likely to support. But yeah, it's an open question.
I mean, it almost seems like if there's not movement soon, there just won't be, right? I mean, at what point do you just say, we'll try again next year?
Yeah, I mean, we may be nearing that case where you, you know, just reset the clock.
That's Frank Sennett talking about the Greg Hines piece in Crane Chicago Business about maybe a deal coming up in Springfield. Maybe not. There's been, you know, the term spoofing has been getting a lot of play, and Chicago is becoming sort of a center when it comes to prosecuting. Wasn't it the first ever spoofing trial or conviction was just concluded here in Chicago last week or two?
Absolutely. The Kaskia case. There was Panther Energy Trading's Michael Kaskia was found guilty in about an hour on 12 counts of spoofing the markets with this high-speed electronic trading. You put in thousands of orders, and your intention is to then manipulate the price and then cancel those orders before you actually execute on them, so you can make money on the spread.
And so why is it that Chicago is the center of the prosecution? Because usually you think of this stuff as being out of the Manhattan District, right?
Yeah. So we have some new laws, federally outlawing disruptive trading practices. But the U.S. Attorney's Office in Chicago seems particularly eager to crack down on this particular aspect of the finance system, of ne'er-do-wells in the finance system. And so that's why we're seeing, this first case was very successful. We're probably going to see several more coming down the pike.
So this is where Zach Farden will be making his mark, not going after politicians like past prosecutors?
Exactly. He's made policing the finance industry a top priority. He's built a team of a dozen prosecutors last year to focus solely on commodities and securities crime, using kind of new tools legislatively given under the Dodd-Frank law to thwart disruptive trading practices.
That's Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business. We're talking about some of the top stories in the business world today. And one of the ones that got quite a lot of play last week and they're still being talked about today is the idea of tips at the restaurant and getting rid of them. We'll kick that around right after this on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Frank Sennett is here from Crane Chicago Business. And the headline in the paper is tipping becoming obsolete? My God, I hope so. So this comes out as a Danny Meyer, and I interviewed him when he wrote a book several years ago, but New York restaurateur, right, is sort of eliminating the tips at his restaurants.
Yeah, so he's made headlines recently in New York and beyond for his Union Square Hospitality Group's plans to eliminate tipping and raise wages for all workers at its 13 restaurants in New York. So basically this move mirrors that of Nick Kokonis and Grant Achatz at Alinea, Next, and Aviary here in Chicago. And other local restaurants here have done it as well, eliminated the tipping, added a 20% service charge. Those include Grace, 42 Grams, Moto, Elizabeth, and L Ideas. So these flat service charges can be then used to raise back of the kitchen salaries.
That's what I like about it. So it's not just going to the waiter or waitress now. It's a more equitable sort of disbursement, a reallocate. What is it? What was it Joe the Plumber said? You want to reallocate the wealth or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Because it used to be,
redistribute the wealth.
Right. So the servers could knock down $120,000 while the actual chef was making $35,000. And so people saw that as being out of whack. It's very hard to recruit kitchen staff these days, so they're trying to equalize it a little bit.
So they've done it in places, and where they've done it, the people, the dishwashers and others, have seen their money go up.
Absolutely. And also the service at these high-end restaurants seems to continue apace. After Alinea introduced the service charge and eliminated tipping, they won an outstanding service award in 2012. It was the same year that it eliminated the tipping. So there are concerns, however. The folks behind Boca Group, which runs Grill and the Goat and some other great restaurants, think that if you take away tipping, you could make it less likely that servers on the front of the house will work extra hard to get that extra money if they think it's going to be the same regardless. So there are some arguments against it.
How often do you give a tip based on service?
Well, and see, that's a good question. As a consumer, I pretty much just always put down 20%.
Right, me too. And just because that's what's expected and that's what I do.
Yeah, these people have families to raise and et cetera. I don't want to rock the boat.
And then when someone does it just a horrible job, you could sit there and say no, I'm not going to do it, or you could say, well, it wasn't her fault.
Right.
The food was cold. It wasn't her. And just imagine yourself out of it. So to me, every time I sit down, I'm going to give 20%.
Yeah, so I think that the move toward the service fees at these higher-end places makes some sense. And there are even some middle-of-the-range folks like the Radler in Logan Square. They've eliminated tipping, and they have an across-the-board 20% service charge. They gave all their back-of-the-house employees a raise. Some of the servers are making a little bit less money, but the owner says the thing with them is now they have some consistency because in the slow months they used to take home a lot less, and now they're going to take home the same amount every week.
And you talked earlier about the grand bargain maybe brewing in Springfield, and part of that involves an increase in the minimum wage and then a scheduled continued increases. As the minimum wage goes up, there is more of a labor shortage, I think, in some of these restaurant jobs.
Yeah, because there's going to be more competition at that price level at a lot of other employers in the service industry, sure.
Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business, good to see you again. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
We'll take a break. Kim Gordon will be here with the latest, the news headlines, and around the corner, the U.S. Secretary of Labor, Thomas Perez, as well. All right here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. U.S. Labor Secretary Thomas Perez is in Chicago today to talk about Illinois' workplace IRA program and to prod other states to go along. He joins us now on the Business Lunch. Mr. Secretary, welcome to the program.
It's great to be with you and your listeners, Steve.
All right, so let's talk. I know this is a national issue, but let's start a little bit closer to home in Illinois. The idea is that there's such a thing as a workplace IRA being created here. It would help workers who don't have access to a 401k in the workplace. Explain for me that program, the Workplace IRA.
Sure. The Workplace IRA, which has been passed here in Illinois, responds to the following problem, which is there's a looming retirement crisis in America. You know, in the Ozzie and Harriet era, people worked 30 years at the same job, and when you retired, you had a you get a pen, a party, and a pension, and that pension lasted for your life. And after you passed away, your spouse would get the survivor benefit. Now we're in the world of IRAs and 401ks, and the reality across America is that roughly 68 million people don't have any retirement vehicle through the workplace, and so they will be exclusively relying on Social Security. And that is a rickety way to live, because you want to have that three-legged stool of savings, a retirement plan, and Social Security.
I mean, I worry that even those saving on a 401k plan are going to come up short when it's time, I think.
Well, and we're trying to promote more savings, and obviously the Great Recession turned a lot of 401ks into 201ks, and that's why the president spent so much time talking about this looming retirement crisis. And the president's been taking action at a federal level, but at the same time, a number of forward-leaning states, Illinois, California, and Oregon, have been moving forward with these state IRA plans. And what they're designed to do is to get those folks who don't have a plan in the workplace the opportunity to save, because there are studies that show that people who are put into a savings plan, the auto-enrolled it's called, are 15 times more likely to save. And that is really important. And so what they did in Illinois, and I applaud the leadership of the treasurer, Michael Frerix, and others who passed a piece of legislation that will enable moving forward folks who don't have any form of savings in the workplace to get it. And the big issue, and the reason why we're involved in the federal government, is that states have raised the question of whether these efforts are preempted by federal law. There was a law passed over 40 years ago called the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, or ERISA. And the question presented is, does that federal law prevent states from taking actions to help people who don't have a pension to save? And we believe that we can help states through the issuance of regulation to move forward with plans like the Illinois model. And so we're issuing a proposed rule that will do just that, that we think will help to grease the wheels so that states like Illinois, California, and Oregon are able to move forward in a way that helps consumers to save, and also doesn't run afoul of federal law.
So you write this rule, and that gives states a little bit of cover from lawsuits down the road when they create their own plans, thereby encouraging them to do it more quickly.
It's exactly right. We can never give a state a 100% guarantee that they're not going to get sued. What we can do is we can do a lot through this regulation to mitigate the risk in litigation. And I think the safe harbor provision that we have proposed at a federal government level will enable states to do exactly the types of things that Illinois has already done. So Illinois has really been in the forefront, and I applaud their efforts, because this is about one of those basic pillars of middle-class life, which is retirement security. And for all too many people here in Illinois and across the country, that pillar needs fortification.
All right, so the Illinois plan, I think is the threshold 25 workers or so. Bosses then would be required to withdraw from their checks 3%. The worker could opt out. The worker could decide to do more. But the employer then would take the money out and send it to the state for sort of a state-run IRA. Do I understand that correctly?
Right, that's correct. Okay. And it's important to underscore for your listeners that this is entirely voluntary. So while there's the auto-enrollment feature, if an employee decides that he or she doesn't want to participate, they don't have to. They can simply fill out a form and say, I want to opt out, and that's the end of it.
All right, so
and that's very important.
Right. So right, but it's there if you know you can't do it on your own every week, and like you said, you're 15 more times likely to save if it's automatic. Right. So I've been doing this program long enough to know, though, that when the government comes up with a new program, business is going to say, look, here's another regulation that we have to deal with. You're going to require small businesses to set up this withdrawal mechanism. What do you tell them?
Well, I think first of all, what we tell them is that they're not required to match any of this. If they want to do so voluntarily, that's a different story, but they're not required to match. And I've spoken to a number of employers, because in this job, I have found that if you're going to do initiatives like this, you got to make house calls with employers who would be impacted. And what I've learned from employers is that one of the things they value most are their workers. And the employers that I talk to who do not currently have a savings vehicle, the reason they don't is not because they don't want to. They, at the moment, simply can't afford it. And so what they love about this is that the cost to them is minimal, and the benefit is that it helps them retain their workers, because if they can help promote savings within their workforce, then they can help their workforce stay longer.
We're talking to Labor Secretary Tom Perez, who's in Chicago today, to talk about this. I mean, in Chicago, it's called the Workplace IRA. I think in other states, they're setting up maybe a statewide 401k or things such as that. One other question, Mr. Secretary. You know, the jobless numbers continue to look good, but critics often point out labor participation, that is at an all-time high. And I wonder, in your job, you know, how you weigh that, because the fact is the jobless rate is going down, the number of jobs created is going up, but there also are a lot of people, and not just people retiring, there are a lot of people not looking for work now.
Well, again, when you look at where we were when the president took office and where we've come, the unemployment rate was approaching 10%. Now we're at 5%. We've had 68 months in a row of private sector job growth to the tune of over 13.5 million jobs. When we were in the depths of the recession, there were almost 7 job seekers for every job opening. Now there's 1.5 job seekers. It's undeniable that we've made tremendous progress. And in the last 2 years especially, not only have the quantity of jobs grown, but the quality of those jobs are growing. Now, having said all that, there's no one spiking the football at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, because we got a lot of work to do. And one of those areas where we can improve on is to get more people into the workplace. The primary reason that you see lower labor force participation rates is that more people are retiring. It's the aging of the baby boomers. But that doesn't mean that we can't take steps to increase labor force participation. And what I find interesting and, I'll say politely, inconsistent about those critics of labor force participation is that the most important thing we could do from a public policy standpoint to increase labor force participation would be to pass a federal paid leave law in the United States Congress, because we are the only industrialized nation on the planet that doesn't have some form of federal paid leave. And if you look at the data, and I'll give you one quick data point. In 2000, the labor force participation rate of women in Canada and the U.S. was equal. Canada now has in place very forward-leaning paid leave policies, and their paid, and their female labor force participation rates are about 8% higher than the U.S., and if 8 percentage points higher. And if you were to have us just have kept pace over the last 15 years with Canada, we'd have 5.5 million more women in the workplace, 5.5 million more women helping Wall Street and the Silicon Valley and elsewhere to look more like America, 5.5 million more women contributing literally hundreds of billions of dollars to the Social Security Trust Fund and the Medicare Trust Fund. That is what we could do. That's the most important thing that can be done. And the people that are the harshest critics of labor force participation have a sock in their mouth when it comes to doing something about it. That's the most important thing we could do. And by the way, when you do that, you help families, because you help people to be able to stay home when they have kids during that critical bonding period. That's the right thing to do and the smart thing to do. And everyone else in the world has figured it out. And unfortunately, the Republican leadership in Congress has allowed it to become an ideological issue in the United States. And it's the only country where paid leave is an ideological issue. That's unfortunate.
Secretary of Labor Tom Perez, very politely put. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. It's great to be with you and your listeners.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, thank you, Ori and Samuel. Since Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, when it comes to paying for eggs, I would imagine Sophie Evanoff has a couple of opinions. She is the proprietor of Vanille Patisserie. I think it's at the French Market in Chicago, and they are just opening up a new shop in Lakeview as well. All right, Sophie, first correct my pronunciation. How did I do with the name of your shop?
You did excellent.
Oh, come on. Vanille, huh?
Yeah, Vanille. You can...
Well, let's go with Vanille. I'll trust you. Okay, so you're in the French Market, and you're opening up in the 2100 block, I think, of North Clark Street, right? Is that open now?
We're already open, and we've been open on Clark Street for about 2 years, and we're opening in Lakeview next month.
I'm sorry. Okay, I was behind then once. So you're going to have your third location coming up not long from now. All right, let me ask you just an odd question before we get to the Wi-Fi. I mean, here you are running a few patisserie in Chicago, and clearly French food, a French name. Do you have a connection with Paris? And I'm just wondering how all of this relates to you in running this business.
So I personally am not French, but of course, I do feel like I have a personal connection. We have so many customers that are of French descent and have family there, and I've had team members that have been from Paris. So it is very personal to all of us.
Yep, I'm sure it is. Well, thank you for that. Let's talk about connections and disconnecting, right? Because so many people go to, it's a selling point for a lot of restaurants or cafes that they are Wi-Fi enabled. You have become Wi-Fi disabled. What's that about?
Correct. So I never even considered having Wi-Fi before we opened the store. It's something I did not want to do. It's super important for me that when people come here, that they are enjoying the pastry and being in the moment and enjoying the knee. It's part of our experience here. We want you to enjoy everything in the atmosphere and our team members instead of being plugged into your laptop and, one hand buried on the cell phone and then one hand trying to eat a dessert. It doesn't work.
Well, I suppose you can't stop people who are using their cell phones, the cellular technology of it anyway.
Yeah, no, we don't. And but usually what we see is people will take pictures of the pastry if they're by themselves. We put so much love and time into the pastry in the kitchen, and I want people to enjoy it with that same amount of time and care on the other end.
You know, when I was reading about this, what I thought of were, is it Taj Mahal maybe, or Joe Jackson's another one? Some of these musicians who are very intent on having their audience at concerts listen to what they're playing, and they will stop a concert, interrupt themselves if people are being too noisy or not focusing enough on their music. And that sort of seems to me to be what you're doing in your cafe.
Yeah, correct. Same idea. I mean, it's just where everyone's so fast paced and we're all trying to do you know, so many things at once, and no one just stops and enjoys that moment. So that's what I'm trying to do here.
Do you think you've succeeded? I mean, do you feel at all that you're making an impact on that?
I do, because people come in here and, you know, they get to know, we've gotten to know so many customers by first name, and that's just by chatting with them if they're by themselves. And moms come in with their kids and they read storybooks to them. I have a collection of French and American children's books. So it's just about creating connections and relationships amongst each other. And I have so many customers that have made friends within the store just because they're sitting next to each other and they just strike up a conversation.
Yeah,
so you know, it's really great to see.
Well, it's nice to read about, because, you know, I'm one of those guys who has a defense mechanism, whips out the phone and looks at it, you know, at any sort of quiet moment I have. And then I miss a lot of chances for human interaction and actual connection. So at Vinnie, that is not an option.
Correct. And we will talk to you. Our whole team is trained. If you're by yourself and you need company, we will be more than happy to sit down with you.
If you notice that I don't want to talk to you, will you leave me alone, Sophie?
Yes.
That's Sophie Evanoff. All right. How can people find out more information about Vinnie?
You can visit our website. It's VinniePatisserie.com. And you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Instagram, we're Vinnie Chicago, and Facebook, Vinnie Patisserie.
And it is Vinnie is spelled V-A-N-I-L-L-E.
Correct.
All right. Nice to talk to you, Sophie. Good luck.
Thank you.
And,
thank you so much.
You know, the nice thing about Wi-Fi is you can listen to the Business Lunch wherever you go.
True.
You might have to look into that. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah. Thank you.